So why do so many people still reject Darwinian evolution? Perhaps no one is better equipped to answer that question than University of Wisconsin historian Ronald Numbers. His book, The Creationists, is widely considered the definitive history of the anti-evolutionist movement. And Numbers himself has a unique perspective on the subject. He himself was once an ardent creationist. Steve Paulson sat down with Ron Numbers to talk about the hidden history of creationism.
There's a stereotype that creationists just aren't that smart. I mean, how can you ignore the steady accumulation of scientific knowledge that has shown overwhelming support for evolution? Is this a question of intelligence or of education?
Not fundamentally. They're really dumb creationists and they're really dumb evolutionists. I don't know that one has a monopoly at all. Of the 10 founders of the Creation Research Society, 5 of them had earned doctorates in the biological sciences from major universities. Another had a PhD from Berkeley in biochemistry, and another had a PhD from the University of Minnesota. These were not dumb, uneducated people. They were individuals who rejected evolution for religious and, they would say, for scientific reasons.
And yet that's so hard to understand for people who aren't religious. I mean, if you go through the university system, get a graduate degree in the biological sciences, how can you still allow religion to trump science?
Well, most people who reject evolution do not see themselves as being anti-scientific in any way. They love science, and they feel that creationism is scientific.
Given your field of study, you have a particularly interesting personal history. You grew up in a family of Seventh-day Adventists, right?
That's correct. All my male relatives, I believe, were ministers of one kind or another.
All? Going how far back?
Both my grandfathers. My maternal grandfather was president of the International Church. My father. All my uncles on both sides worked for the church. My brother-in-law is a minister. My nephew is a minister.
So you went through Adventist schools.
I mean, First grade through college.
Through college.
I graduated from Southern Missionary College in Tennessee.
Hmm. And what did you think about the story of life's origins as you were growing up?
I was never exposed to anything other than what we now call young earth creationism. Creation science, as you may know, came out of Seventh-day Adventism. My father was a believer. All my teachers were believers. All my friends believed in that. I can remember as a college student, I majored in math and physics, and there was a visiting professor from the University of Chicago lecturing on carbon 14 dating. And he was talking about scores of thousands of years. And my friends and I just looked at each other, wincing and smiling, and he just didn't know the truth.
But at some point, your ideas obviously changed. What caused you to start to question the creationist account?
I wish I knew. There are a few moments that I can identify that proved crucial for me. One was I went to Berkeley in the 60s as a graduate student in history and learned to read critically. Also, I was exposed to critiques of young earth creationism. And the one that stands out in my memory as being decisive was hearing a lecture about the fossil forest of Yellowstone given by a creationist who had just been out there to visit and found that of the 30 or so successive layers, you needed, assuming the most rapid rates of decomposition of lava into soil, and the most rapid rates of growth for the trees who came back in that area, you needed at least, say, 20 to 30,000 years. And he had slides. And the only alternative that the creationists had to offer for that was that during the year of Noah's flood, these whole stands of trees came floating in, one on top of another, until you had about 30 stacked up. And that truly seemed incredible to me.
So your beliefs kind of came crashing down at that moment.
Well, the night after I heard that, I stayed up till very, very late with a fellow Adventist graduate student friend of mine, wrestling with the implications of this. And before dawn, we both decided that the evidence was too strong.
Hmm. Now, you went on later to write a book about Ellen White.
I did.
About the founder of the Seventh-day Adventists. That proved to be quite controversial, right?
It did. I wrote about her as a historian would, without invoking supernatural explanations. That bothered a lot of people because, according to traditional Adventism, she was chosen of God, who would take her into visions where she would see events past, present, and future. Once she actually, God took her back to witness the creation, and she saw that creation occurred in six literal 24-hour days, which made it impossible for most Adventists to play around with symbolic interpretations of Genesis. I also found in my research that she had been copying some of her so-called testimonies, which were supposed to be coming directly from God. So it did create something of a stir.
Well, and I would think in your own family. I mean, here you were, a child of generations of Adventists. That must have created some trouble for you.
It did. It created some trouble for my father, too.
Your father, who was a minister.
My father was a minister. Some church members were very harsh with him. Here I was, about 30 or so, and they were telling him he had no right being a minister if he couldn't control his sons. He took early retirement.
Because of your book?
Yes. He was thoroughly humiliated by this.
Did he try to talk you out of the book?
Oh, yes. We had hours and hours and hours of argument. He had limited number of explanations for why I would be saying this about the prophetess. One was that I was lying, but he knew me too well, and he says, I know, Ronnie, you're not going to lie. So the only explanation left for him was that somehow Satan had gained control of my mind, and what I was writing reflected the power of Satan. For a number of years, he could not bear to be seen in public with me if he thought no other Adventist would see us, that was no problem. But if there were going to be Adventists around, he wouldn't go out with me.
What are your religious beliefs now?
I don't have any.
So how do you describe yourself? Are you an atheist?
I don't think so. I think that's a belief, that there's no God. After a number of years of trying to resolve these issues, I decided they're not resolvable. And so I think the term agnostic would be best for me.
You mentioned that Seventh-day Adventism actually played a crucial role in the history of creationism. An early Adventist was the one who really laid out the whole idea of flood geology, didn't he?
Exactly. George McCready Price, Ellen White's disciple, came along in the early 20th century and made the flood the key actor in the history of life on Earth. And he tried to show that the entire geological column could have been deposited in about 1 year. And that became the centerpiece of what he called the new catastrophism. And then in about 1970, that view, flood geology, the new catastrophism, was renamed creation science or scientific creationism.
But this is a fascinating history, because you're saying that this whole idea of flood geology was really laid out by George McCready Price in the 1920s.
Correct.
And then it kind of disappeared, or it sort of went underground, and then it was revived again in the 1960s.
In the early 60s, two fundamentalists, a theologian named John Whitcomb Jr. and a hydraulic engineer named Henry Morris, took Price's flood geology, reworked it a little bit, and published it as The Genesis Flood. Notice, the seminal books in the history of creationism have focused on geology and the flood, not so much on biology. And as a result of what Whitcomb and Morris did, Price's views exploded among fundamentalists and other conservative Christians.
But why? Why did this view, which on the surface seems kind of outlandish, the
yes.
idea that Noah's flood would have somehow resolved all of the contradictions within the fossil record, why would that suddenly explode in popularity in the 1960s?
And especially when fundamentalists had perfectly orthodox interpretations of Genesis 1 that would have allowed them to accept all the paleontological evidence. One was that the days of Genesis represented vast geological epochs, William Jennings Bryan accepted that.
So in that account, you could have the Earth going back billions of years.
Time was no problem. So you had these perfectly good interpretations of Genesis available to fundamentalists. Why would they accept this radical, reactionary theory that everything was created only about 6,000-7,000 years ago?
Okay, well, I'm willing to bet that you have some explanation here.
The biggest explanation, I think, is that for 100 and some years, Christians had been reinterpreting God's sacred word, the Bible, in the light of new scientific discoveries. And people like Whitcomb and Morris, the authors of the Genesis flood, struck a really sensitive chord when they said, it's time to quit interpreting God in the light of science and start with God's revealed word, and then see if there's any model of Earth history that will fit with that.
Because otherwise, science keeps chipping away.
Exactly. At it never ends. It always changes, and it means you're going to have to constantly be reinterpreting God. And it wasn't so much that they invested in the Genesis account as that many of them were concerned about the last book of the Bible, Revelation. And they would argue, how can we expect people, Christians, to believe in the prophecies of Revelation about end times, which were so near and crucial, when we symbolically interpret Genesis? So they felt, if you want people to take Revelation seriously, you have to get them to take Genesis really seriously.
Now, one thing I find curious about your position in all of this is, I mean, you are generally acknowledged to have written the history of creationism, your book, The Creationists. You've been very upfront about your own lack of religious belief. And yet, as far as I can tell, you seem to be held in high regard by both the creationists and by scientists, which I have to say is a neat trick.
I think in terms of getting along well with critics of evolution, I haven't gone out of my way to attack them or to ridicule them. I know some of the people I've written about. They're good people. Some of them are smarter than I am, not a particularly high standard, but I know that it's not because they're stupid that they're creationists. I'm talking about all my family, too, who are still creationists. So that easy explanation that so many anti-creationists use, that they're just illiterate hillbillies, doesn't have any appeal for me.
University of Wisconsin historian Ronald Numbers talking with Steve Paulson. If you'd like to learn more about the history of creationism, you can read Steve's interview with Ron Numbers that ran in Salon magazine. You'll find a link on our website at ttbook.org.